Welcome to Dream University's Dream Talks, a series of conversations and interviews with thought leaders in the dream movement. Sit back, relax, and learn.
Today, we are very, very lucky to have with us an extraordinary woman speaking about a funny and unusual topic that I know many of you are interested in learning more about. And Carol Castle works extensively with people who are procrastinators or who think they are and who want to operate more optimally in personal and professional areas. She's helped companies, big ones like Sony, Hilton, and Volvo, and she's a professional speaker who's addressed conferences all around the world. She's currently writing her book entitled The Power of Procrastination, and she's conducting a survey. She can tell us a little bit more about that, where you can enter and even possibly win a complimentary coaching session with her. Her website is New Leaf Systems, and you can find out more about the survey right there. And, you know, Carol, I think it's a very unusual topic that you've chosen to address us with today, and I know that our members are really interested in hearing how they can work around, you know, with some of the really core issues that often do stop us from realizing our dreams, tapping into courage and overcoming, you know, laziness or procrastination. So I love your talk today, your title, Generating Courage and Faith to be Lazy. And I want to say thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Marcia. It's a delight to be here.
Carol, where are you based?
I am now based in Florida for the winter months and in upstate New York for the summer months. I am living a dream.
Well, that's where I was going to start. I was going to say to you right off the bat, what's one of your personal and professional dreams that you are working on?
Well, for a number of years, I have wanted to live someplace in the south in the winters because I have a low tolerance for the cold weather. I feel like I'm hibernating for half the year. So I had been thinking that it was another 5 to 7 years down the line that I might move to someplace that was warm in the winters. And last year, about this time, my mom and I visited some family members in Florida, and I decided I would look around at some sustainable communities, and I ended up putting a deposit on a lot, much to my surprise, and 5 months later I'd sold my house in New Jersey, and here I was building a house.
Ta-da! And how are you doing on building your house?
We're at Sheetrock right now. Mm-hmm. I'm renting a house about 4 houses down from where I'm building, so every day we visit the house.
Oh, that's fabulous.
So we're more than halfway there.
I'm laughing because many people on the call who are members of my dream circle know that I wound up buying a house that I didn't know was a teardown, but a $1 million bungalow in Tiburon. The lot is worth $1 million. The house is worthless and basically has to come down. And it will be a dream come true when I build my Mediterranean villa on it, but we're not there yet. And it's inspiring for me to hear that you are in action and that you're living right down the street and can keep a watchful eye on it.
Yeah.
And Carol, how about one of your professional dreams?
Well, one of the recent professional dreams, which we'll see what happens with, is I attended the ICF's International Coach Federation's research symposium last year, and I decided that it would be fun to interview a number of the researchers and get published in this year's research symposium. So I've put myself out there interviewing all of these researchers, and I'm not a researcher, so I'm, you know, I feel like really out of my league, and I've actually submitted a paper to possibly be published in this year's symposium and be invited to speak.
Well, good for you. Congratulations. I'll keep my fingers crossed for you.
Thank you.
And I'll see you a bit there. I just spoke the day before yesterday for the Resource Academy, and this is a group of people that are doing fabulous work with working with kids in risk and teaching their parents how to be coaches. It was really fabulous. And the other speaker there was Joe Dispenza from What the Bleep.
Uh-huh.
You know, and we were talking about the ICF, the International Coach Federation, and certainly my program, my Dream Coach University program, is accredited, so people can get continuing education units, because the ICF that you're talking about, I'm just going to punctuate it for those that are on the call that aren't coaches, and we have many that are coaches, really is the governing body for our industry. And I did speak at their national convention 2 years ago, and it is an honor and a privilege to be there with your peers at that level. So I will keep my fingers and toes crossed
for
you. But whether you're speaking or not, make sure you stop by so we get to give each other a hug.
I certainly will. You bet.
So tell me, what got you into this whole thing about procrastination?
Well,
and what does it do with having or not having to make your dreams come true?
Sure. Well, I became a coach because I, on the side of a day job that I had had, I decided to do professional organizing, and I found myself coaching people. And through that process, became a coach and realized that clutter control, organization, whether it was space organization or whether it was time organization, was all about people putting things off.
Mm-hmm.
And so they put this off or that off, and they had a hard time managing their time because they had too many things to do, or they would do things, they wouldn't do things in the proper time, and so they'd have too much to do later, or they would be disorganized because they wouldn't deal with things as they came in. And I recognized the link between all of this and procrastination and how people often want to pursue their dreams and they put them off, and that's another form of procrastination. And it's a very serious form of procrastination, because then we end up living our entire lives doing things we think we should do and never doing the things we really want to do.
And what does this have to do with generating courage, the courage to be lazy?
Yeah.
That is a cool idea. We want to hear about that.
Well, you know, the name of my book that I'm coming out with, and that's another professional dream, to get a nice big fat advance on publishing that book. And The Power of Procrastination, as you can tell by the title, holds procrastination in not such a negative light, necessarily. I believe in positive or productive procrastination, which is, what I mean by that is, the kinds of things that aren't really that important or that urgent in this moment can and should be put off for now, if not entirely or forever, so that you can focus on the things that really are important. So, you need to be lazy. Marcia, you know, you have these 10 steps to living your dreams. One of them is to access your dreamer. And you can't access your dreamer if you're constantly going, 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 going. You need some downtime. You need some lazy time to access your dreamer.
You need dream time.
Yes.
I love that. So having the courage to say no, and the courage to do what?
The courage to delegate, procrastinate, the courage to do nothing in the moment.
I love that. The courage to do nothing.
Yeah.
You know, it's true. I think most of us are, you know, either addicted to doing.
Yeah.
You know, we create this false sense of urgency. We feel needed and important when something needs to be dealt with right away. But then everyone complains that they don't have enough time to do what they really want to do.
Yep. And so the courage and faith, what I mean by that is that often we think that if we take the time to be lazy, to do nothing, to pursue our dreamer, to refill the well that we keep emptying, is that all kinds of other things are going to happen and we're going to fall behind. We're going to somehow not being addressed the things that need to be addressed. But the thing is that when we're constantly going, our ability to appropriately or fully address things gets increasingly diminished the less we pay attention to our dreamer and the less we replenish our well. And so having the courage and the faith to be lazy is all about taking the time for yourself to access those dreams and to replenish that well so that you can then operate on all cylinders when you come back, even if it's 2 minutes as a break.
I love it. And I think also the courage to say no thank you when something's not true.
Yeah.
Like, how do you feel that that ties into integrity?
Well, certainly any, you know, boundary issues regarding somebody asking you to do them a favor or take on a volunteer position, or your kids asking you to, you know, ferry them back and forth or to participate in some new activity when they're already involved in lots of activities, or if your boss asks you for a particular project, you can't necessarily create boundaries around that, but what you can do is get clear about what is expected and what isn't, and where is the time for you to get clear on what you need to do to pursue your career goals appropriately.
So it sounds like taking a little personal inventory, seeing what's true for you, what's not true for you, learning how to say no thank you, making space in your life for the things that really do matter to you.
And letting go of those things that are already in your life that aren't serving you.
So let's talk about the letting go concept.
Sure.
You know, because I know in the early days when I heard letting go, I was like, let go of what and how and why? And, you know, some, I think you know, it's a phrase that we use so often, but from you know, from an expert like yourself, how do you talk about letting go and what advice would you offer to us that are on this call that are, let me give you a sense, that are looking for dreams of starting new businesses, looking for new careers, running, you know, running marathons, getting healthy and physically
yes.
fit, writing books.
Yes.
We have every imaginable kind of dream and dreamer on this call.
Well, you know, I advise all dreamers to make sure that their dreams are really aligned with what is truly of value to them and not align yourself with dreams that are just shoulds. Somebody else's idea of who you should be or what you should do. So that's number one. And that takes courage. And that takes some awareness. And about, I just want to make a quick distinction between letting go and saying no.
Good.
Saying no is to things that are not yet in your life that are potentialities. Opportunities that come your way, you have to decide, do I take this opportunity or do I skip this one? And that requires faith, too. If the opportunity doesn't really serve you, it only partially serves you, you may need to wait for a better opportunity.
And that takes courage as well.
You betcha.
Mm-hmm.
So letting go is of those things that are already in our lives that aren't serving us, whereas saying no is to those things that are not yet happening and that we have the choice of including or not including. So we can let go of too much TV, of too much caffeine, of obligations that used to be fun or used to serve our interests or purposes or values but no longer may, of boundaries or boundary-less relationships. That doesn't necessarily mean we let go of the relationship, but we let go of our role in the relationship of being a martyr or of being too much of a server or rescuer. A codependent.
Really, just so well said. And I, you know, letting go of a bad attitude, a limiting belief,
yes.
You know, the place inside our doubter voice that often kills off our dreams before we explore the possibility.
Exactly.
And like you're saying, I agree. We don't let go of that part of ourselves. So we don't necessarily sever the relationship. But we can transmute it, we can transform it, we can initiate a new relationship with that part of ourself or others. And I, you know, I think that, so often, you know, we kill off the dream before we explore the possibilities. So what I love the, what you're saying is that there's really this time and this opportunity to stop, to check in, to see what's true for you, and then to really make that higher choice in service to your purpose, your mission, your dreams, or whatever it is that's really most important to you.
We have a lot of inner critique going on all the time, and it's hard to separate that inner critique, the value of the inner critique, from the limiting factor of it.
So how do you separate it?
Well, yeah, you recognize that there is a value in what the critique, when the critics in your mind have to say. The value is to protect you from failure. But what we our habit is that we use those critiques as a stoplight rather than as a caution. We can use those criticisms that are in our head. You'll never amount to anything. Why are you doing this? You'll never succeed. All of those things we can use to say, how can we use this information to succeed? What do we need to know? What does our critic have to tell us that we need to be aware of so that we can manage that possibility so that we can succeed?
I love that. I call it a wisdom voice.
Mm-hmm.
That everything that we've ever done makes us uniquely qualified to do everything we want to do. And every experience that we've lived through, you know, contributed to a part of us. So why would we want to alienate or cut off or destroy different parts of ourselves? I often say if you can sometimes turn that doubter voice down one notch, it becomes the voice of the realist. The
yeah.
realist wants to know what the plan is. So I love what you're talking about here. I'm on board with it. Please
yeah.
continue.
Well, you know, we often have a tendency, especially if we've been taught to think positively, to just discount that critic.
Right.
Discount that voice. And that voice is only going to get stronger if you do it. So my advice to those of you who face that, and that's all of us, is to not just discount that voice, is to say, what do you have to tell me that's of value that I can do something with? And then thank you very much, and you go on your way, and the voice goes on its way, and you get to proceed towards your dream and not stop yourself.
In the retreat that I'm leading in Maui in November, we're actually doing some work called Active Imagination, where you actually, you are talking to that voice, you're, you know, moving with that voice. Sometimes you're using art supplies to get in a relationship and what we call concretizing it, because exactly what you're saying, I think, you know, what we resist persists, and what we, you know, try to push under the rug gets louder, bigger. And anyone who's listening on this call, if you notice that there's something that's nagging at you, it could be a dream that's wanting your attention, but it could also be doubt, fear, limiting belief, obstacle, the voice of procrastination, I recommend sit down with the journal and interview that part. Actually get curious and ask it why it's here and what does it have to offer and when did it come into your life, and actually, you know, ask the questions and let that part of you answer and be open to some insight.
Yeah.
So do you have a way that you coach people on working with those different voices or parts?
Sure. One of the methods is to simply allow the voice to say what it has to say. In a coaching conversation, I have people do what I call feeling into the feeling. And it simply involves, instead of resisting it, which is what we do, we turn to another behavior, we turn to another thought, we do something else, anything to avoid the discomfort of that critic. So instead, we do the opposite. We go right into it. We just allow our attention to seep way down into whatever that voice is telling us, whatever that experience physically is. We find out what information there is for us. And essentially, all of that stuff, if we ignore it, it's kind of fermenting and twisting and blocking us. And once we actually allow ourselves to experience it, it goes on its merry way. It's gone. It's
fabulous. Fermenting. It certainly conjures up some images.
Yes. Yeah.
Carol, you talk about going beyond the to-do list. I read this article on your website.
Uh-huh.
Talk a little bit about how someone can go beyond the to-do list.
Sure. Well, you know, most people, if they haven't used to-do lists in their lives, those to-do, you know, incorporating a to-do list strategy can be exceptionally helpful and help them be much more productive. However, for those people who've been using it for a while, often to-do lists become prisons. They become a recipe for self-loathing. They become what causes us to procrastinate because we become so overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
So we go beyond a to-do list into taking a look at what is it we really want to accomplish in our lives and what today can I do toward that end. So that we're no longer just checking things off on a long to-do list. We live beyond the to-do list, where the to-do list, since it's become a prison, is no longer what our operating structure is.
So what are some of the practical things that I can do, given that I have so many things? I know I'm speaking for many on this call. Given that we have so many things that we have to do, you know, what's another way that I can organize or structure my life? I mean, I teach something similar, and that is, you know, the way to live a more joyful, fulfilling life is to schedule more things in that you love.
Yes.
Have your to-do list not just be the things that you have to do and problem-solving things.
Yes.
You know, what else can get us, you know, beyond practical? I'm looking at my desk right now. It's buried. I have stacks of to-do lists.
Sure. So my suggestion is to take all your to-do lists and put them aside for a while and to take a look at what are those things you want to accomplish. What would you love your life to be like in 10 years from now? What are those accomplishments done between now and then? And really connect with what it's like to have lived your dream. And now take a look at where you need to be 5 years from now in order to be there. And in essence, you're going to work your way back down to this week and today. Now, that doesn't mean you're not going to have some things to do, but it means that you let go of your long list of to-do and you only have a few things that you do today. And those to-do lists, they become a part of something that you work with, but tangentially, not as an operational structure for today.
So when I wake up in the morning, when you wake up in the morning, here you're somebody who has mindfulness about procrastination. You're clearly a can-do person. You're proactive. And don't worry, we also know the dark side of that. You know, because, I mean, you know, on any day, you know, we're all having good days and bad days. But on an ideal day, when you're really waking up, how do you set, how do you start your day out on the right foot? Because I have an in-home office now, and I can, you know, get up and go right to my computer and be in the habitual behavior of email, which is my mortal enemy these days.
Yeah.
You know, even though I love and adore the messages that it brings, the addiction of it, I think, is so dreadful. You know, so how do you manage your day right from the get-go to really get the most out of it?
The first thing, and this is the biggest thing about beyond the to-do list, is to recognize that we all have too much to do these days, and there's no way that we can accomplish it all. No way. We just have an inhuman amount of stuff that we want to accomplish.
Yes, I agree.
And no matter how much stuff we accomplish, there's always more that we want to accomplish on top of that. No matter how high our standards get for ourselves, once we start reaching a standard like that, we just up the ante. So the first thing is to recognize that we're doing this to ourselves, and that living in the 21st century involves having a lot of things to do and understanding that you're never going to be able to do them all. And so you've got to focus on those things that are the most important to you, that have the biggest ramifications right now and later. So when I get up, the very first thing that I do is I do yoga or Pilates. I take care of my body, and then I finish that with a short meditation about what it is that the universe wants me to have today, or know, or do.
And so are you not looking at your days ahead for the most part?
Oh, I do, but I don't do that till later in the day. The night before, I look at the next day. What does the next day hold appointment-wise, obligation-wise?
So there's the appointments that you have to schedule, and life can operate around that.
Yeah,
but even this practice of, you know, I think Tony Robbins calls it chunking.
Uh-huh.
You know, that if I sit down and I say, okay, from 10 to 12, that's email computer time.
Yep.
I wind up being so much more efficient and so much more productive, as opposed to just letting it infiltrate the rest of my day.
And, you know, there's a courage and faith aspect of stopping looking at your email.
Oh, yeah. Say a little bit more about that. I need to hear this message.
Well, I will say that I have a few hundred people who have taken my procrastination survey, and of those people, the largest segment of people procrastinating, what they're doing while they're procrastinating, is read email.
Yes.
Isn't that funny? So what I mean about the courage and faith is we look at the email continually because it's the new avenue for business, for opportunities, for news, for friends, for all kinds of great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're really attached to it, not only because of that, but it's also an area of obligation. It's another urgency, and we feel that we've got to respond within minutes to emails.
Why do we feel that way? Do you know why we feel that way?
It's bought into the culture of fast.
I think part of it is the culture of fast, and there's a new piece I want to add, if I may, that I've been discovering.
Sure.
And that is I love to feel needed, significant, and important.
Oh, sure.
So if I'm hitting that send and receive button and somebody wants me to speak or wants me to write or wants to acknowledge me for some way that I've made a contribution in them, you know, I feel fulfilled. I feel, you know, important. And also it's the sense there is some kind of drug around this sense of urgency that you're talking about.
And, you know, you can recognize whether that's coming up for you about this, you know, desire to have served somebody. There's a wonderful upside to that, but the downside is when you check your email and there's nothing there and you have a small sinking feeling.
Nobody needs me, wants me, or loves me. I better go eat some chocolate. You know, because I agree with you around your health, body, and wellness, and the courage to, at some level, put our own needs first. You know, and so that ultimately we'll have more to give to and for the people that we love and care about. Because I can't tell you how often people say to me, well, it's just selfish for me to think about my own dreams. And more and more, and certainly as I get older, I'm looking at, you know, if I'm not taking care of my body, my soul, my spirit, my well-being, emotionally, mentally, physically, and spiritually, I won't have anything left for anybody else.
That's right.
You know, and like you, I mean, I feel like I'm on a very clear mission, this dream movement, and I don't want my body to get extinguished,
right.
You know, or my energy before I fulfill on what I feel like I'm here to do. And often that's the route that I'm going down. So for me, the courage is to say no. The courage is to get up and get out of the house in the morning instead of going right to the computer. I'm not very good at it. But on the days that I do it, I have more energy and more vitality, and then I can come back to my desk and be so highly intentional and focused that it's a kick-butt day. I'm getting a lot more done.
Yeah.
You know, but that habit of not taking care of, I do want to announce to you and everyone on the call that I'm heading to British Columbia tomorrow. I'm speaking for several different direct selling companies, and I had a block. I mean, one is on Wednesday and the other is on Saturday, and Thursday I have scheduled a head-to-toe spa day.
Love
lavender rub, exfoliating, hot stone massage, and then on Friday I'm writing a feature article for Women's Day, and that's going to be my writing day. And instead of feeling guilty or, you know, or just trying to catch up on email, I'm really practicing and getting better at making my needs just as important as I make everybody else's.
Yeah. And, you know, there are things you can put in your life to help you do that. For instance, I ended up being the accidental owner of a horse.
Now, oh, my goodness. How did you have to tell us a drop about how that happened?
Sure. In this community that I moved to here in Florida, there's a stables on the premises, and they rescued Premarin mares that were used to produce the drug Premarin. And there was one that they were going to give away to a petting zoo, and I offered to sponsor it. The woman who owns the stable said, no, we won't let you sponsor her training and care, but if you want her, you can buy her for a dollar.
Oh, my Lord. And what kind of a horse is she?
She's a huge Belgian draft horse, weighs about 1,600 pounds.
Oh, my Lord. And what's this horse's name?
Goldilocks.
And what do you do with her?
Well, for the first few months, essentially I had courage lessons with her. It was, for me, lessons in courage to deal with this horse who had no manners, who had no learning, and of course I was green too. So I had a neighbor who was very experienced with horses who gave me lessons, and I called them courage lessons. Because to be around this horse and be lifting up her hooves and grooming her and going underneath her legs and getting on top of her and doing training things with her required a great deal of courage.
So what did you learn about courage?
Well, what I learned is you got to push yourself to go there, but once you go there, it's so rewarding.
Hmm.
And what I did, I'm talking about, you know, designing some structures into your life was,
yes.
I made this decision to have Goldilocks. What this is doing is it's making me go out to the stables a number of times a week to take care of her and have lessons. And that, for me, is a joy.
Hmm.
But it's so hard to rip myself away from my business. However, because she's a responsibility and she's also a dream, the responsibility aspect of it gets me away from my office so that I require less of my own willpower to do it.
So you're saying some of the simple things that we can do is plug some of those kinds of practices,
yes,
into our lives?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if there's something that you want to incorporate, whether it's exercise, you get somebody else on board, and you together, you create either two of you or four of you or six of you, some kind of time where you've all committed to do this at a certain time of day on certain days.
Are other people helping you with Goldilocks?
My husband.
Yeah, because, I mean, the power, I think it also takes courage to share your dream,
yeah,
and be inspiring and enrolling and invite other people to join you, because that's where it does become ultimately more fun and easier. You know, but people, some of us, like myself included, who have been used to being lone wolves and doing it on our own, sometimes asking for help is challenging.
And that's another way to be lazy, is to delegate and to hire.
And to barter, so it's not even always about the money that might be stopping you.
Yep.
You know, I mean, sometimes I need somebody to do a project for me. I might say, you know, hey, I'll give you a free seat in my workshop. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, I would love to do that. And they jump right in. So I think a lot of us can get much more creative than we know.
And also, Goldilocks happens to be, for me, a direction. I would love to experiment with equine assisted. I'm sorry, did you get that?
No, I didn't.
Equine assisted coaching.
And did you say that that's something that you're doing?
That I would like to experiment with.
You know, I met when I spoke at the New England Coaches Chapter. I met a couple of women who actually do that. And if you guys are on the call, when we open up the lines, either one of you, make sure you speak up. But if they don't, you can shoot me an email, and I'll be happy to connect you with them.
Thank you.
Which, of course, this is the power of what my dream circle is all about, that as we share our dreams with each other, there's all kinds of resources available who can help us expedite the process and help make things happen faster. And I certainly know one of the ways to overcome procrastination is to get with people who can show me faster, easier, simpler ways of doing it.
Yeah. Another thing to do, if you're bothered by the to-do list and you have too much to do, is to use a template, and any of you can email me to request that template. Go to newleafsystems.com and get my email address. New Leaf Systems is as in turning over a new leaf, and I will send you a template. It's called a weekly activities template, and it allows you to take a look at how you're spending all your time and your energy.
Oh, I want that.
Yeah.
So New Leaf Systems, plural, .com, newleafsystems.com, and you can just email Carol there. It's K-E-R-U-L at newleafsystems.com, and we would call it the weekly planner.
Weekly activities template.
Weekly activities template.
I love that.
Hey, Carol, I see that you're also working a lot with kids. What's that about? Speaking in schools.
Well, I do a lot of, I'm trying to articulate it in a way that'll be great for people who aren't coaches. I work with kids who are going along a path that isn't really serving them very well. They're coming from environments that are not conducive to their development or their productive development. In other words, they're starting to show behaviors that are not going to be productive for them in the long run. And bringing them out to the stables, for instance, or taking them for walks with dogs, or bringing them on birding workshops, which is another area that I am expanding into.
Burning, did you say?
No, B-I-R-D, birding.
Oh, with the horse.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Right. So the birding workshops are really about just connecting with things outside of you, because what happens to all of us is we get very disconnected, we get very separate from everything, we're very involved in our own little stories, and all of this work helps to bring us back to the connection between each other and everything else that is so much more wholesome and fulfilling, and brings us back to this state where we can pursue things from a more grounded and centered place, rather than being so separated and so sort of neurotic and isolated.
I'm looking at your website and seeing you with your beautiful horse. Just so gorgeous. And I can just feel, as you're talking about getting us, you know, grounded and coming back to what's important to us and what matters, I can really see how this horse must be teaching you.
Yes, she's quite a teacher.
Really must be teaching you. So back to the kids for a second. What age kids are you working with?
Oh, they vary in age from about 5 or 6 all the way up till 16.
And what kinds of things are you actually physically doing with them?
Well, sometimes we go for walks in the woods or on trails at different times. Sometimes we go out and we just talk about, at the stables there are 2 miniature horses, so we groom the horses together and we talk.
So lovely.
Yeah.
You know, and what about us bigger kids? Young adults and adults, you know, again, if we bring it back to making your dreams come true, we know that, you know, procrastination can turn into something much worse, like never getting to something. Obviously we put things off enough and they can just die away. So how do you work with someone, you know, who just has bad habits, who has a dream, who has a passion, who has a vision? We have many people like that on this call, but we, you know, either we get stuck or get stopped.
Well, generally, the first thing I do is identify what this person wants that they're not getting and what they have that they don't want. And then we start identifying whatever patterns are bringing them to that kind of behavior or reality.
Let me go back to have you say that one more time, because I think that was just that was a really powerful statement.
Sure. The very first thing I do is I find out what they want that they don't have and what they have that they don't want.
It's great, because they have to get rid of some of what they have that they don't want, which then I would imagine would make more space and time for going for the things they really do want.
Yeah.
So right off the bat, that's something simple that people on this phone can do.
Yep.
On this call. And then what?
And once we identify those two things, then we take a look at what can help inspire them to achieve what they do want and what's in the way of it. Those things that they don't want are usually indicative of some kind of attitudes or beliefs or ways of operating that are not productive.
Can you give us an example of how you've worked with a client in that way?
Absolutely. So, let's see. Who shall I pick? I've got one client, for instance, who recently went from a newsroom job, to a sales job. And there are many things about the sales job she likes, but she's not very organized, or at least that's her perception. And so she has some goals to get organized, and certain things get in the way. So we took a look at what was it that she wanted. Well, she wanted to be organized, and what didn't she want was that she was getting was to be disorganized and have piles of stuff all over the place. So we took a look at what patterns and beliefs there were, and it turned out that there's this woman who's a friend of her mom's who is really, really organized and really, really capable, very accomplished, very capable, very organized, and she thought she should be like this woman. And I said, well, tell me more about the woman. And she started going into about how this woman, she didn't really like the woman. And I said, well, honey.
Why do you want to be like her?
Exactly. So she had a belief that if she became organized and if she became capable like that woman was, that she would be somebody who wasn't very likable. And it wasn't even, once she recognized that that's what she was thinking, it was like, oh, duh, how stupid. But she hadn't recognized that this was operating for her.
So she was moving toward the thing that she didn't want, it sounds like. And she wanted, on one hand, she wanted to be like this woman, but on the other hand, she didn't.
Exactly. It's what I call conflicting desires.
Mm-hmm.
She had a desire to be like this woman in one sense, but a desire not to be in another sense. And that kind of conflict is the kind of thing that ferments and gets in your way. So until you recognize what's going on, and often with a buddy or with a friend or with a coach, these are the kinds of things you can identify as patterns or beliefs. So this woman has a pattern of coming in and feeling very tired from the day and wanting her own time. And she deserves her own time. But if she only spends 10 minutes before she gives herself that time dealing with what came in today to put it into its proper place, then she could really relax wholeheartedly rather than having this sense of clutter blocking her from really being able to enjoy her downtime.
At one level, very simple, but the power of the process that you're taking her through, it sounds like there's a lot of discernment. And like I know a word, whittling away, you speak about, really getting clear about what does matter, what doesn't matter, where is there conflict, and then a little bit of separation, which I know can bring tremendous clarity.
And detachment.
There it is again, that letting go thing. So detaching from what? From what you don't want?
Not only from what you don't want, but what isn't serving you, and also not only the beliefs, but detaching from the way things need to look and when they need to look that way.
Mm.
So we have ideas of what we want for ourselves, and we think, I need to do this by this time.
Right.
And so often, by putting that kind of pressure on yourself, you're not recognizing opportunities that may be available to you that may be a better way of accomplishing your end result. So you need to detach from it needing to happen this way with these people at this time, and at least to look like that.
And again, just sort of this last point, and then we'll open up the line for other questions, Carol. How does one go about detaching?
More courage and faith. If it's not this, it's going to be something better.
Because and then the actual practice, because there's the courage and faith. So I can practice. I can practice having courage, which I do think
steps.
Is. I'm sorry?
Small steps.
Yeah, say a little bit more about that.
Well, just little itty-bitty things, like you think your husband or wife needs to do this particular thing this way. So what if you just let go of the way they need to do it and focus on the end result?
Mm-hmm.
They want. And, or, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and trust that they actually know how to do it their way.
Right. And that if they don't, that you can always request that they ask you if they, you know, want any help with that, or that you can go back later and say, you know, there's something about this that I just want to bring your attention to, but not be attached to needing them to do it that way.
This letting go, detaching, trusting, having the courage and the confidence, willingness to try it a new way, all
experiment.
Exceptional principles.
Yeah, just to be willing to experiment and play with it and see what happens.
I love that because that lightens it up. Experiment and play with it and see what happens. Carol, let's open up the call of the lines here. If you're in an area where there's a lot of background noise, if you hit *6, not you, Carol, if you hit *6, you'll mute out the background noise. But be sure when you want to ask a question or make a comment of Carol or myself, mostly of Carol, she's our expert, we want to take advantage of having her here, you want to hit *6 to unmute your phone. So if you're in a noisy background, you'll hit *6. If you're on a cell phone, you may need to redial in on a landline. We'll see what it sounds like. And let me open the line. And if you'd like to just say, you know, say hello and just say your name and where you're calling from, it's always great to know who's on the line. Anything at all that you want to ask about procrastination, excuse me, I'm so sorry, or anything else that's come up on the line.
That would be a place to
hello, I'm hearing somebody, but we're not hearing you clearly. Maybe you're wanting the *6 your phone if you're not talking to us. Thank you. So, question, comment, thoughts, anything, just or if you'd like to just say hello.
Hi, this is Coach Renata. I'm from California.
Hello, Renata.
Hi, I love that you did this topic. I consider myself a recovering procrastinator.
Hey, good for you.
And I happen to work with teens. Can you tell me a little bit more about that topic as well? You said you do walks and hikes. I'm in a school environment, so I was wondering, what other techniques do you feel is really good? Because I work with at-risk teens.
Mm-hmm. Well, essentially, I'm sure that you've had plenty of training in this area, but anything that reconnects them with something outside of themselves, something bigger beyond themselves, something that can connect them with what is outside of this story that they're in about their life and their lack. Anything that does that, pets, animals, environment, art, sports, as long as they're, you know, mostly non-competitive sports, because then we just get into a whole ego-based problem about when we get involved in some sports. But anything that can bring out any of their greatness and reconnect them to that, or just get their focus out of being solely on themselves and their situation.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
In what capacity do you work with kids?
I'm a teen coach, family coach, and then I'm also a school counselor.
How wonderful. Thank you for the important work that you're doing. We so need people working with kids. And excuse me, you might want to look, if you don't know about them, the Resource Coaching Academy. That really is looking for coaches to work with kids and in schools and things like that.
Thank you.
Quite exciting, absolutely, yes. Another question, comment, or anything at all that you'd like to share at this point? Just say your name and where you're calling from.
Somebody wants to say something.
That was a nice hum. Was that you, Brad?
Here, I'll talk.
Oh, yes, go ahead.
Hi, it's Linda Spevisek. Hi.
Hey, Linda. Hi. Well, there you go. Another person is committed to working with family and kids.
Well, yeah, absolutely. That's a whole other topic. We'll talk about it. I wanted to ask Carol. You know, I procrastinate on stuff that I really don't like taxes and paperwork. And I'm great at doing the things that I want to do, but I cannot get motivated to sort of get rid of the stacks of stuff that I don't want to do.
Well, my suggestion is that it's not that you can't get motivated, it's that you've chosen to not make it a priority.
That's true.
Yeah, because you should see this woman, Carol, when she makes something a priority, she moves worlds.
So
say a little bit more about that, please.
Until you decide, Linda, to make it more of a priority, maybe you can accept that it's okay that it's this way. And simply by releasing the pressure on yourself that you need to change that, it may help you deal with it.
Okay. But sometimes it becomes a priority, obviously, you know, when deadlines loom or you can't find the thing you're looking for.
Yeah.
Although I know where things are, but
uh-huh.
I sort of want it. Okay, so it's a matter of, yeah, making a decision.
So I think it's also the criteria of what becomes a priority.
Yeah.
So right now, a lot of us make things a priority when there's urgency or when we're up against, you know, there's a bomb that's about to be dropped. And, like, what if we actually created a practice that was about making something a priority because it really matters to you? And then in the morning, you're looking at, okay, what are the three things that matter to me the most?
And, right. And what may happen is that you decide that serenity matters to you more than putting things off, matters to you more than the momentary fun of watching TV instead of the 5 minutes it'll take to put your receipts in the proper place so that come, you know, March when you have to prepare your stuff for the tax preparer or the accountant, that it's all in order.
Yeah, I like that concept of serenity.
Yeah.
I love that concept. And I also am a real advocate of systems, can I just say, from the left brain approach.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, being someone who's independent and, you know, in terms of, you know, I don't have a company that I work for. I work for myself, and I certainly have people that work for and with me. Putting systems in place has been the thing that's actually created more space and with space, more joy in my life. And, you know, in the early days, it was as simple as having, you know, a Gazinda and Goes Out a folder, you know. So for my, you know, for my bookkeeper, it was like, okay, bills go here and check stubs go there. And, you know, then I had to find somebody who I could just send these two folders to. Now, obviously, as my business has grown, my systems have become more complicated, but nothing like having a good system in place for keeping things. Don't you find that, Carol?
Oh, I'm a huge proponent of systems. And I think that most people have a problem with systems only because they feel that they should know how to do it and they've never been taught. And it's simply a matter of getting the information and starting to, again, experiment and play with different systems that will work for you. Because often people think they have to use somebody else's system, and that is a recipe for disaster.
But I know also that you're, I think you were involved with NAPA, the National Association of Professional Organizers, and I have definitely hired a professional organizer to come in before. But I just recently had one of these breakthrough discoveries in this area, and, you know, Linda, I know it's a little aside to what you're asking for, but I do think it's part of the solution, and that is, you know, okay, so manila file folders, actually creating a file folder. My problem was the folder never made it off my desk into my file cabinet. And what it, I'd have folders all over the place. I had this beautiful love seat in my office that nobody ever sits in. You know, it's gorgeous.
Uh-huh.
And what I've actually done is I stacked the folders on this chair, but they're so neatly stacked. Like, I actually know where everything is right now.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's what you're saying, Carol. It's finding the system that works for you. And you know what? At some point, myself or my assistant might get all those folders filed away.
Uh-huh.
But they're no longer all over my office and all over my desk. They're neatly stacked.
Right. And they're no longer putting pressure on you to do something about them.
And not only are they not putting pressure on, but I can just tell you, you can hear it in my voice, I am tickled pink over this.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I am so joyful that I have found a simple way that works for me to be really organized. And if I start looking at those folders like, oh my gosh, when am I going to get them filed? I'm back in that place feeling icky about myself. But now instead I'm just all tickled at, look how creative I am. I found a system that works for me.
Yeah, thanks. I like that a lot.
Good. Linda, thanks for saying hi. I'm looking forward to talking to you.
Me too.
Yeah. Who else would like to say hello or ask a question or comment for Carol? Brad, I thought I heard you back there before clearing your throat.
Unmuting or remuting?
Anybody that would like to say hello, or if you have a question for Carol or even for me at this point, we can open up to anything at all. Or anything, if you would just like to say hi and give us an update on a dream that you're working on.
This is Vicki, and I'm an ADD coach. And Carol, I wanted to see if you had some experience working with ADD clients and any thoughts or observations of how you might work differently with them or not. What kinds of successes have you had?
Well,
And please say what ADD is, just in case there are people that don't know.
Attention deficit disorder.
Yeah.
So I will say that there are a lot of people that I have coached who are self-diagnosed ADD. And I have also discovered that there is something called attention deficit trait, or ADT, which our culture promotes. So, I mean, if you take a look, if you remember 30 years ago, commercials were a minute long. Today, commercials can be 5 seconds long. Scenes in movies and television shows last for fractions of a second. The pace of life has simply increased, and the obligations of life have really increased. So many people who are finding that they're having difficulty keeping their attention on anything, really, for many people, it's simply a product of the world we live in today. And to accept that it's not a failing. At the same time, there are a lot of people who then make that an excuse for themselves, ADD, or especially when it's self-diagnosed, so that they're giving themselves the excuse of not achieving what they want to through, and I know this is controversial with me to say, I understand that, but I think that often people give themselves the excuse of having ADD, again, especially when it's self-diagnosed, for not pursuing certain things that they would otherwise perhaps pursue. Now, for those people who do have ADD, had been diagnosed, and they're receiving some assistance through medication or other means, that you need to help them focus on one thing at a time for short periods of time, because that's the way they operate. So you simply need to work with one thing at a time for small periods of time, and you need to help them create systems that support them in doing that and also in getting things done. So you make things simple and uncomplicated, and you tailor things specifically for that kind of operating system. Is that helpful?
Could you give a specific example of somebody
Sure.
you work with and
Yes,
what
absolutely.
You were able to do?
So there was this gentleman named Rick, and Rick had difficulty concentrating on things for long. Well, I have a technique for helping people keep their environment in a tidy order and declutter, and that is to spend 10 minutes a day decluttering. Well, 10 minutes at once was a little much, so we designed a 5 at 5. He was an early riser, and he did 5 minutes at 5:30 in the morning and 5 minutes at 5:30 in the evening. 5 minutes was what he could handle, and that worked. And it became so that it was an automatic behavior that he didn't have to think about, and greatly enhanced his ability to control his environment.
Very nice. I just jumped in. We were getting a lot of background noise there, so I'm afraid we've lost our background folks. Anything else you want to say, Carol, just in kind of finishing up that point?
No, I think that pretty much does it, unless you have another question about it.
Let's see if I can open the line. I'm sorry, we've got the line open again. I apologize. The woman who was asking about ADD, if you want to ask anything else.
I'm fine. Thank you so much.
Oh, good. a little technical glitch there. I apologize. So, I mean, I think, you know, it's interesting. So the whole idea of, you know, breaking it down into small tasks, and I think for me, you know, because I work with people with every imaginable challenge, and I think there's a process of honoring and acknowledging and appreciating and celebrating. But there's also that tough love side, really calling people to the mat when they're not doing what they said they need to do. And I think certainly when you're working with someone who has any kind of emotional or physical challenge, you know, really having an agreement up front about how far you can push them, you know, and how much they want to be held, you know, to the mat. I've seen people do phenomenal things and have incredible breakthroughs, and often it starts with me believing in them and standing by them to help them believe in themselves.
Yeah, you know, because on the one hand, you do want to give yourself the benefit of the doubt, and you do want to be gentle with yourself, but you don't want to do what Pema Chodron calls idiot gentleness.
Right, where you're just laying down and playing dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't want to just give up and say, well, you know, this is too difficult for me right now, and so I'm just not going to do anything.
Exactly.
That's copping out. That's not pursuing your dream.
Exactly.
I had another quick question.
Yeah, and last question, then we'll wrap it up.
And I love this topic of procrastination because I love it. with people who have poor memory skills. How do you integrate that? Is it, do you feel procrastinating or just poor memory?
Well, I would need to, you know more about the particular client or clients, but even with people who have poor memory skills, there are a lot of systems that you can put in place, computer reminders, palm devices, watches with reminders or alarms on them, all kinds of things that you can utilize to help jog their memories.